to turn it on yet? Okay, so here. Fit? Good? Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, good morning, everyone. We're beginning Parshas Vayeshev today. We start a new segment in the book of Bereshis. The next four Parshas deal with Yosef and the brothers. And we're going to try to understand a little bit. There's so much to learn here. I'm going to pick one small aspect of the story. Now, on the sheet that I've given you, the first side has about the first 10 verses or so discussing what happened with Yosef and the brothers. And basically, the basic storyline is that, well, let's read a little bit. It'll help us a little bit. Vayeshev Yaakov Eretz Megorei Aviv Be'eretz Kenan. Yaakov lived in the land where his fathers had sojourned in the land of Kenan. Ela told us Yaakov, these are the children of Yaakov. This is the chronicles of Yaakov. Yosef ben Shvasrei Shana. Yosef was 17 years old. Hayoroes Achav Batzon. He was shepherding the sheep and his brothers by the sheep. Hunar, and he was a lad. The words are all very hard to understand the civil meaning. It was a lad, Esbenei Bilhav, Esbenei Zilpa, Neshe Aviv, with the children of Bilha, the children of Zilpa, the wives of his father. But Yaveh Yosef is Dibasam Ra'ah El Avim, and Yosef brought the bad words to their fathers. And the Torah goes on and says how Yisrael loved Yosef more than all the other brothers because he was a Ben Zikunim to him. Simply translated, a son of his old age. And he made him the ksonas pasim. He made him the coat of many colors. The brothers saw this, that Yaakov loved him more than him, and they hated him, and they could not speak peacefully with him. Then we have the dreams that Yosef has. And the dreams causes the brothers to hate him even more. And he tells them the dreams, and he says, we were making bundles of wheat, and my bundle got up and stood, and yours circled mine and bowed down to mine. And the brother said, do you think you will rule over us? And they continued to hate him over the dreams. He had another dream. He dreamt how the sun and the moon and the 11 stars bowed down to him. He told the dream over to his father and his brothers. And his father scolded him. He said, what kind of dream is this? Do you think me and your mother are going to bow down to you? The brothers were jealous, but the father kept the matter in mind. Okay, this is the first 10 psukim that kind of set the stage for all the calamities to follow. So I'm going to focus as one part of the story. I'm not focusing on the whole story here. One part, the dreams. All right? So let's ask a simple question. Is Yosef a liar or is he not a liar? What's going through the brothers' minds? He says, I had a dream. So is he Stam a crackpot, or is he someone that's believable? So if Yosef's telling him the truth, that he had these dreams, and if these dreams really have any meaning, right? It's not just the thought process of what a person thinks during his day. I mean, that's the whole shiloh. I don't want to get into the Gemara, the whole shiloh of what is a dream. Is it just what you think about during the day? Is it a type of a foretelling of the future? But let's assume that Yosef's dream was something real, that he would be the leader of the brothers. And let's say there was validity to this dream. So what do the brothers want from him? So what's wrong with what he's doing? Okay? You know, they call him, later on in the parsha, they call him the Baal HaChalomos, the master of dreams. Oh, here comes the Baal HaChalomos. Here comes the dreamer. Later on, when Yaakov sends Yosef to see him, the brothers, they say, oh, look who's coming, the Baal HaChalomos, the dreamer is here. Well, it should be a compliment. A person has a dream. Hashem gives him the dream. Remember, who else had a dream? Not that long ago, not too many parshas ago. We shouldn't have forgotten that fast. Yaakov had a dream. No? What was the dream? The angels going up and down. Hashem spoke to him the dream. Hashem says, I'm going to give you the land of Eretz Yisrael. You're going to be a patriarch. I'm going to protect you. What about that dream? Do you think Yaakov told his children? You know, I want you to know. I'm going to tell you a story about what happened in my life. I had a dream, this and that. It came true. I don't see any other brothers having any dreams. Asaph didn't have any dreams. Nobody had dreams. Yaakov had a dream. Yosef had a dream. Do you think Yosef's such a crazed man that, you know, that we should think he's a meshuggener over here? So, Baruch Hashem! He had a dream! He had a dream! And he's gonna be the leader! So, and to say that the dream had no validity at all, we see that Yaakov corroborates this, because we look in the first source, get a little chopped off on the side there. It says, Vaviv Shamaras Adavar. Rashi says, Hayamamtin, he was waiting, Umitzapen, looking forward, Mosayova, when it would come true. So Yaakov, who has experience in understanding dreams in this whole family? There's only one person with experience, Yaakov. So now, he should have said to Yosef, forget about it. I don't want to hear it. He just steps and says, forget about it. I don't want to hear about it. It's nonsense. Go back, play with your blocks. Play with your sheep. That's not what Yaakov says. Even though he said, do you think me and my mother will bow down? But he didn't really say that the dream wasn't a dream. And the Torah says, and the father anticipated when the dream would come true. And I don't think he could have hid that from his children as well. So it was pretty clear it was a heavenly message, no less heavenly than the message that Yaakov had that we understood to be totally true. So what's the problem over here? They should be happy and delighted. We have 12 brothers, and God gave a dream to one of them and said, he is the boss. Finished. The fact that he's one of the youngest, big deal. So Yaakov was the younger one of Esav. What's the problem? So this is a major question. That's the most important question we have to understand over here. I mean, I'm not going to get into the whole issues of sibling rivalry. That's another class for another time. I'm not denying these points, but I only got an hour or so I got to pick one idea and work with it. Now, more than this, we know that Yosef is called Yosef HaTzadik. Of all the patriarchs, he's the only one that's called HaTzadik. So that means, you know, God doesn't give that term away easily. He's a tzaddik. So let's see what he did. Look in the second Rashi. It says, V'hunar, he was a youth. What does that mean, he was a youth? So Rashi says, he was doing youthful things. And what was that? Misakim Bisar, he was fixing up his hair. He was getting a style. He was getting a style. Right? Mimash Meshbeinav, he would groom his eyes. I guess he's getting a little, I'm not good at these terms, you know this better than me, right? He's powdering up the eyes a little bit, the makeup face. Kideshi and Nira Yofas, they should look attractive. Doesn't sound, I don't know too many tzaddikim who do that, right? Now you might say, well, maybe later on he became tzaddik, but not now. But then again it says, in the next Rashi, he's a ben zikunim. And Rashi gives three interpretations, and one of them is, Bar Chakimula, he was a wise son to him. Whatever Yaakov taught him, he learned. So it seems that he was a giant of intellect. So he really was a Talmud Chacham. At 17, he was a young, aspiring Talmud Chacham. You know, we know we have people in Europe before the war who were great scholars. The Or Sameach wrote his commentary, Mishachov and the Chumash, I believe, when he was a teenager. He was afraid to publish it right away because we wouldn't listen to it. But you could be. He was a scholar, a child prodigy scholar. So what's he fixing up his hair and prettying up his eyes for? Then it says, V'hunar es b'nei zilpa. So what does that mean? What does that mean, V'hunar es b'nei zilpa? Well, Rashi says that the other brothers were denigrating the children of the maidservants. So he would hang around them. Why? V'humakarvan, and he would befriend them. So that seems like a pretty mature thing to do. But on the other hand, he does masanaris. He does childish acts of grooming his hair. So how does that make any sense? And what's the whole nature of him trying to be makarv them and bring them close? What was he exactly trying to do over there? Then there's another thing. Later on in the Torah, we're told that when he gets thrown into jail in Egypt, and when the butler and the baker have their dreams, and he interprets the dreams, so he tells the butler, listen, do me a favor, when you get out, put in a good word for me. And the Torah, we ends off this parsha. In the next source, number 5, it says, he not only did he not remember, he forgot him. And he forgot him, why? And the rabbis tell us, he forgot him because Yosef put too much trust in him. He shouldn't have put trust in that fellow. He should have said, Hashem will save me, I don't even have to ask the guy to help me. Which is very hard to understand. But the rabbis seem to criticize him. He's a tzaddik, but he doesn't have trust in Hashem. I don't get it. He remained a tzaddik for 11 years while he's in that jail in Egypt. And not like the kind of jails that people live in now. It's like a real hellhole. Okay, he's living there for 11 years. He's putting on tefillin every day. He's living like a proper Jew every day. So now all of a sudden you tell me he doesn't have bitachon in Hashem? So to make it short, Yosef is quite an enigmatic figure, to say the least. So how do we understand Yosef and what message is there for us over here? So we're going to bring you a medrash. I don't have it in the sources here, but I'll speak it out. But there's one thing you had to realize. Whenever you learn medrash, and I said it once, I said it a lot of times, that whenever you have a medrash from the rabbis, they're not just giving us over secret messages that were handed down, you know, from generation to generation, mouth to mouth. The midrashim are really a sophisticated analysis of the text. And the midrash won't take something out of the simple text. It's got to be somehow rooted in the text. So which makes this midrash I'm going to tell you very, very strange. We know that when Yosef got sold into Egypt, the wife of Potiphar cast her eyes upon him. And she tried to seduce him. And it came to a moment where he almost succumbed. We know she waited for the proper moment. But even before that proper moment, in the beginning, she offered. Now, Potiphar was totally not involved with what was going on in the house. Yosef was running the house by then. Potiphar trusted Yosef with everything. So she made an advancement to Yosef. And now look at the bottom. What does it say about Yosef? Now look, you look in the Hebrew for a minute. But we're at the bottom right-hand side. That first line, the third word, the word says Vayimain. Do you see that word Vayimain? Now you see on top of there a cantorial note. You see the cantorial note? It's a squiggly line over the Aleph. You see that? Mm-hmm. So that's an unusual one. It's called a shalshelis. And that's read something like this. It's three times going up like that, right? You don't have it often. And when you have it and you're listening in shul, you notice it's there, right? So what does it say? He refused. And he said to her, he says, my master doesn't know what's going on in the house. Everything, he's trusted me with anything. There's nobody greater in this house than me. He hasn't held back anything from me except you. How could I do such a terrible thing? And then he says, V'chatasi l'Elokim, and I will sin to God. So you ask Yosef, if you ask us, why did Yosef not succumb? You'll say, because it was an immoral thing to do. So to there, there's a medrash, and I don't have it in here. The Medrash says, well, you see the Shalsheles, it goes up three times. So they say there were three different levels and three different levels of refusal. And the word Vayimoein, Vav, Yud, Mem, Aleph, Nun, Sofis is an acronym for three different sentences. Starting with a Vav and then a Yud and a Mem and Aleph, Nun. First one is Vayar Yosef Mare Aviv Negdo. Vayar starts with a Vav, Yosef starts with a Yud, Mara stands with a Mem, Aviv starts with an Aleph, Negdo starts with a Nun, that the first letter spelled him in, and it means, and Yosef saw a vision of his father opposite him. That's what Vayimain means. He refused because he saw a vision of his father. Another interpretation, again, five words, first letter starting with a word, Vayomer Yaakov Mechoshen Atonimchak. He hears his father saying, your name will be wiped off of the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol. The high priest wore a breastplate, had 12 stones, and on each of the stones had a name of one of the tribes. And he hears his father saying to him, if you're going to sin, your name, Yosef, is going to get knocked off of the stone. Vayomer Yaakov, Vav Yud, Mechoshen, that's a Mem, Ato Aleph, Nimchak, you'll be wiped out. No, that's Vayimoein. And the third one is, Vayira Yosef Milatami Esnafsha. And Yosef was afraid to sully his soul. Same Rashi Tevos. So those are three reasons he refuses. He refuses because he sees the vision of his father. How can I do this to my father? He hears, although his father didn't speak to him, but he's hearing a guilt message from his father. You're going to get wiped off of the breastplate. And number three, he was afraid to make his soul tummy. Now, so these are reasons he refuses. So the question is, but the pasuk doesn't say that. The verse doesn't say any of these reasons. The verse says, it's not nice to my master. Another reason, it's a sin. You're giving all these other reasons the Medrash says. The Torah says that Yosef refuses because it was an immoral thing. So why do the rabbis take so much out of the text and give us three different reasons? And another question the commentators ask, even the two reasons in the Torah. If a lady comes to seduce you, so which reason do you give? You have two reasons. Well, you know, it's not right. My master, he trusted me, all these things, and it wouldn't be a nice thing to do. Or the second one is, guess what? God says it's an avera. You know, that open and shut. It's an avera. You have 20 words, you know, hemming and hawing. Well, you know, my master trusts me, this, that, how can I do this? The last two words, that's all you need. Vechatos Elohim, if you sin to God. Finished. It's a sin to God. So what's this whole talk beforehand? Right? Is it his duty to his master, or is it his duty to his master of the universe? It's a much bigger duty. So what's going on over here? So we're going to start by quoting a verse in Psalms, and then a Gemara that elucidates on it. Very complicated, not complicated, just hard to understand piece of Gemara. We'll explain that, then we'll apply it to Yosef, and we'll see how much sense it will make here. If you look at, in the next page, Tehillim, Pei Aleph. It's also Shir the Yom. It's one of the Psalms for the day. It says, Tiku b'chodesh shofar. Blow the shofar at the moon's renewal. Blow the shofar in the month. Ba'kesel yom chagenu, when the moon is covered. Kichok Yisrael, it's a law for the Jews. Mishpat l'lokei Yaakov, it's a statute for the God of Yaakov. Edus piyosei samo, it's a testimony for Joseph. B'tzeser Hashem, when he went as the viceroy in Egypt. Svaso yadati eshmo, when I heard a language unknown to me. What's this pasuk say? So it's saying, blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. So it says, blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. It's a law. You blow, and when's Rosh Hashanah? When you don't see the moon. The moon is covered. When's Rosh Hashanah? Rosh Hashanah is when you don't see the moon. It's the renewal of the moon. Go try to find a moon on Rosh Hashanah. You won't find it. It's the first day of the month. You're not going to find it. And then it says, it's a testimony, something, the moon is a testimony to Joseph when he went out to Egypt. What does the first half of the pasuk have anything to do with the second half of the pasuk? There's no flow to the text. One of the hardest pasukim to understand. Very awkward expression. It says, blow it, ba'kesli yom chagenu, when it's covered up. Why didn't you say, blow it on Rosh Chodesh Tishrei? Say it straight off. And then there's a very, very interesting Gemara. That's the next source, number 8, that talks about the moon. We know, it says in the Torah, God created two great luminaries. The Mo'or HaGadol and the Mo'or HaKatan. The big luminary and the small luminary. The sun and the moon. So we all know there's a famous medrash. Now, like, don't get caught up on trying to understand the logistics of the medrash. We try to get the message of the medrash. The medrash says, first that God made two great lights. First, two great lights. Then it says, the big light and the small light. So the question, I don't understand. You just said they were great lights. So I could have one big and one small. They were great lights. So the truth is, it wasn't exactly that way. What happened was, there were two great lights, and the moon comes to Hashem and says, King of the universe, is it possible for two kings to wear one crown? Me and the sun are both very big. So Hashem says, yeah, you're right. It doesn't make sense. Go make yourself smaller. So, as the Medrash says, it appears the moon shrunk. Okay, again, don't get hung up on the scientific aspect of how this happened. This is not the message, you know. We could talk about that another time. But, you know, just an interesting concept. So the moon says, because I made a suggestion which is proper, should I be made smaller? You know what I mean? I gave a good piece of advice, and the moon, I guess, figured that the sun should be smaller. So Hashem said, no, you're going to be smaller. So Hashem says, listen, so go and you'll rule by day and by night. So go out and be in the day also. Someone says, what does it matter for me to be out in the day? Once the sun's out there, I don't get to do anything. So I says, well, listen, you know, the Jews are going to count their calendar by the moon. Yeah, but he says, yeah, but you can't do it just with the moon. You got to do it with the sun also. So that's, God's trying to placate him a little bit. So that's not going to work. So Hashem says, go. The righteous shall be named after you. As we find that somewhere in the Torah, Yaakov is called small. He says, katonti mikol chasad. I've become small. Yaakov will be called small. Shmuel will be called small. David HaMelech will be called small. So you'll be in good company. So, there's more to that, but that's enough. So like, that's a crazy medrash. Like, what's going on? The whole medrash is hard to understand, but just that last part. What consolation is God giving the moon by making it small, knowing that other tzaddikim are also small? You know, it's like somebody does an injustice to you, and you tell them that, he says, listen, don't worry, I do that to everybody. That's how it sounds. How does that help? You know. So, and really, what was the moon's complaint? That two kings can't have the same crown. So now, what was he assuming should happen? If that's the simple meaning. So what is he assuming should happen? Well, either the moon should be small or the sun should be small, right? Those are only two options if we can't have two kings, right? So if the sun should be small, so how could the moon complain if Hashem makes him small? That's what you wanted it should be for the other ones. And if the moon wants to be small, then he's getting what he wants. So what's the moon's complaint? So Hashem did what the moon suggested. I made one of them small. So it must be that's not what the moon suggested. It must be we don't understand the Medrash. The moon is coming to God with the following problem. He says two kings cannot share one crown. What is the moon saying? He's saying, God, you created me that I should be a king. You want me to function like a king. But you know what? I'm not really a king. I'm not really a king. It's not possible. Because you can't have two kings. We're both big lunars. It's not possible to have two kings. So what you're asking me to do, what the moon is saying, you're asking me to act in a way which isn't really consistent with what I am. You're asking me to act like a king, because that's what the Torah says. He created the two great luminaries to rule. Well, I'm not really a king. I can't be a king, because there's another one that's big over there. So, and we'll see in a minute, this really is the ultimate dilemma that many of us suffer. Living in a reality that isn't real. It's pretentious. Living a lie. So the moon says, God, look what you're forcing me to do. You're forcing me to pretend to be like a king, and I'm not really a king. You know what you should do, Hashem? And what the moon was opting for was, God, tell me I'm not a king. Tell me I'm not a king. Let us know we're not kings. And you know what? Both of us aren't kings. Because what's the sun called in Hebrew? The Shemesh. What's Shemesh? From the word Shamash. What's a Shamash? A helper. Not a king. Even the sun's name is called a helper. We're really helpers. So the sun isn't really a king. It's really a servant. So two shamashim for one king can exist. Two servants for one king can exist. So God, say we're both shamashim. Take us away the title of being kings. Don't call us big luminaries. Just call us workers. Don't give us the pretension of what we're not. Don't call me what I'm not. It's not possible to have two kings in one realm. We're not kings. We can't be kings. So God, make it clear. Define our being as being servants. Don't give me this make-believe image of being the king. I don't want to have that. So Hashem says, okay, you're right. I'm asking you to do something that may seem very unreasonable. I'm asking you to do something that you're really not. I'm telling you to make yourself smaller. Right? Because you're saying I asked you something that was unreasonable. So you know what? I'm going to call tzaddikim small also. So what does that mean? And what's the Medrash really saying? So this is the pshat. The Gemara says, when you make, call something small, when you call a kid small, what are you really saying he is? You have a 2-year-old kid. Is he big or small? He's small. The Gemara says, mechlal te'ika gadol, which implies there could be something bigger. So small is a relative term in relationship to something else. Something's only small in relationship to something else. Tzaddikim are called small. What does that mean, tzaddikim are called small? Shmuel the small. Tzaddikim are being called small because they have the potential to get bigger. That's why tzad is called small. He's small in relationship to what he's going to be. He's going to be bigger. The moon is being told by Hashem, you're not now a king. You have the potential of being a king, but you're small. Right now, you have the potential. You're right. I'm not saying that you have to be the king now, because two kings cannot coexist, as you said. What I'm saying to you is you have the potential to become a king. Therefore, make yourself small, meaning smaller is what you are now, but in the future, you will become bigger. And that's what I want you to live with, this reality, that you are now small. You don't have to live as what you're not, but in a certain way, you're going to have to learn how to live that way, and I'll explain that in a minute. And that's what the Gemara says. Gemara says when we had a Beis HaMikdash and we declared the new moon in the Beis HaMikdash, what did everybody say afterwards? And we say it every month when we bench the moon. We say David Melch Yisrael Chai V'Kayom. King David, David Melch Yisrael Chai Chai. Where did that come from? That song? It was a modern pop group made it up in the 60s. It came from in the Beis HaMikdash when they dedicated, when they announced the new moon, they said, David Melch Yisrael Chai V'Kayom. What does that have to do with the moon? Because the answer is the moon really is a symbol of kingship. It's really a sign of kingship. But the thing with the moon is, you know, the moon was upset, you're starting me off as a king now, but I can't be a king because that's not the reality. That's an illusion. So God says, you're right, you're not a king. Make yourself smaller. Get in touch with what you are, who you really are, and then maybe you'll develop into what you'll be one day. And that's part of all the prayers we say when we sanctify the moon, we bench the moon, we say one day the moon's going to get big again. The moon is an allegory to the Jewish people. But that's what the Medrash is, that's what God said. You said you don't want to be a king because it's a lie, you're not a king, so fine, don't be the king. But aspire to be the king. Make yourself small. What does it mean, make yourself small? We're going to explain now by going through with Yosef now. Now we'll go through with Yosef and see how this all fits in. It's going to be very practical, it's going to teach us a lot. Teach us how to deal with teenagers. Teach us how to deal with obnoxious adults. And maybe more important, not teach us how to deal with ourselves. Okay, let's explain now what a dream is. What is a dream when a dream is written in the Torah? What does it mean when Yaakov had a dream?
Prophecy.
A prophecy. No. Yeah, it's what most people say. It's a good guess. And you're not far off. But technically, it's not. You'll see. So the Rambam, it's a long Rambam. I'm not going to do it inside. Source number 9, but I'll just basically say. He asked a simple question he asked in last week's Parsha. Yaakov had the dream of the ladder. Hashem said, I'm going to protect you till you return. Right? Then Esav is threatening Yaakov, and he's afraid. What are you afraid of? Hashem told you in a dream, in a prophecy, I'm going to take care of you. And the Rambam also tells us an important rule about prophecy, that any prophecy that's a positive prophecy must always come true. Only negative prophecies. When Yonah went to Nineveh and had a prophecy, Nineveh is going to be destroyed, you know, so that didn't have to come true. Nineveh is going to be destroyed if you don't do tshuva. If you do tshuva, you don't have to be destroyed. Negative prophecies do not have to come true. But when God says something positive, the Rambam says, how can we know if a prophet is a true prophet or not? He has to tell you something positive that's going to happen. And if the positive doesn't happen, then you know he's not a true prophet. If he tells something negative is going to happen, it doesn't mean anything, because people can do tshuva, the negative is not going to happen. But the simple rules are, when there's a prophecy, and it's positive, it has to be. There's no such thing it doesn't be. So how could Yaakov be afraid that Yosef is going to hurt him? God said, you're going to be fine. And that was a dream, and as Larry suggested, it's a prophecy. And as many think, it's a prophecy. But the difference is, it's not called a prophecy. It's called a chalom. It's called a dream. And there's a big difference between a dream and a prophecy. You should know this just for your own erudition in Torah now. Prophecy is, nevuah is a 100% message from Hashem, which Hashem tells me to tell over to someone else. God says to Isaiah, tell the Jewish people, this is what's going to happen. And that's 100% true, it's going to happen. Especially if it's good, it for sure has to happen. If it's for something bad, it will happen unless the Jewish people do tshuva. But it's 100% true. There's no question of prophecy. A dream means prophecy that God gives me not to say over to people. A dream is a message of God to me. Just to me. And what's the difference between the two? When you tell over a prophecy, you are saying over what reality is. And that's the way things are. God says, go tell the Jewish people that such and such is going to happen. It has to happen because God said it. He said you to say it over to people. This is the reality and this is what has to be. And there's not a question about that at all. A dream means that God is giving me over a charge. He is giving me instructions. He is giving me a responsibility. He isn't giving me over a statement of reality. Therefore, although a prophecy must happen, a dream does not have to happen. A dream is potential. That I am instructed to do certain things, and if I do certain things, then the potential will become a reality. Prophecy is a message to say over. It's a reality and it has to come. A dream is only for the dreamer's eyes and ears alone. It's not a reality. It doesn't have to be. It's something that can be. God is showing you what you could be and what the potentials are, provided you carry out the instructions, and then it will come true. So now you can understand why Yaakov was concerned. Yaakov shows him the dream of the ladder. He says, this is what I'm promising you. What does that mean to say? Based on what your track record has been for the last 77 years, if you continue to go in the path that I am guiding you in and you don't mess up, yes, everything is going to be true. And that's why Yaakov said after the dream, and if Hashem does all this for me, then I promise you this, that, and these other things. What do you mean if? He just told you he's going to do it. And what are you afraid of Esav? Why are you afraid of Esav? Because that dream was just a statement of my potential. How do I know I reached it? I don't know. And therefore I'm entitled to be afraid. Because maybe I haven't reached my potential. That's an instrument of dream. So it's a potential. It's a prophecy and potential. As opposed to prophecy that must be. Oh, it's all very fine and well. Okay, but let's try to make this a little bit more real now. So Yosef has a dream. So now, how do we understand the dream now? Was he delusional? He was not delusional, right? It was a message for sure from Hashem. And it says, Va'aviv Shamar Sadamar. And the father was anticipating that it should happen. The father hears, oh, look at the potential. I don't see any of this potential with my other 12 kids. None of them are having any dreams. They don't have this kind of potential that Yosef has. He now has had a dream, and this is his potential. He is the only one who has the potential to be the leader of the brothers. And we need to have a leader desperately. He's the only one who has the potential. But these are things that are not yet realities. They're only potential.
So Pharaoh's dreams were only...
Also potentials. The Pharaoh's dream was a potential to save Egypt. And if Yosef wasn't there, they would have been destroyed. Right? Or the potential was for them to be destroyed. I mean, there's a lot of ways you can understand those dreams. But here it's a much stronger. It's with a tzaddik now. We're talking about tzaddik's dreams now. So now what was Yosef's mistake? That's just a symptom of the mistake. I want the essential mistake. Yosef figured he didn't figure he reached his potential yet. He figured if that's what my potential is, I can start living in that reality now before the potential has been reached. That was his mistake. right? He has exactly the same dilemma that the moon had in the Medrash. The moon wants to be the king, but you're not letting me be the king. I am not the king. I only have potential. I can't live just with potential. Can you imagine? You're the crown prince. You will one day be the king. So doesn't the kid want to act like the king right away? What was Simba, right? I can't wait to be the king. Right? Hold on, let me just get a little more. No. Right? So I can't wait to be the king. So Yosef here says, very good, it's very excited. Baruch Hashem. Yosef is saying, that which I can be, then that's what I already am. So by Yosef saying over the dreams, he's living in the reality as if it has come true. And therefore the brothers knew, they knew that he had the potential, no question about it. They themselves say, Hamaloch Timlochlin, are you going to rule over us? What they meant, are you going to rule over us now? Maybe yes, maybe you'll be the king in 50 years. It's possible. But not with the king now. So the conflict that Yosef is going through is that Yosef thinks he's a king right now because of his potential. And believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, this is the ultimate conflict that most of us go through in our lives. Because we all have potential. And if we have any brains at all, we kind of have an idea of what our potential is. So most of us have an enormous amount of potential, but here's the kicker. Like Yosef, but unfortunately we want to be recognized not with our achievements and our accomplishments. We want to be recognized for what our potential is. How could he say that to me? Don't you realize I'm a very smart man? Well, how many years have you been studying? Well, I'm very smart, and I'll be in yeshiva for another 10 years, and then I'll be a Talmud Chacham. I will be a doctor when I finish medical school, so I'm a doctor now. I'm a successful businessman now. You know, I'm a good husband now. Right? Yes, you have the potential to be good. The problem is this. This is where we lose sense of reality. And it's not because we're meshugoyim, because there's a reason for us to lose touch of reality, because that is our potential. We all have the ability inherently to know what we could be to some extent or another. And that is one part of the reality we acknowledge. The problem is we want to live in that and get all the covenant, all the benefits of that reality without working and developing that potential. And the truth of the matter is something is just potential. We really don't deserve to be recognized at all for it. Because number one, the potential is God's gift. And number two, you didn't actualize it. It's a double whammy. Oh, you have people who are very clever, very clever. So now use your brains. Now sit in university for 4 years. No, 8 years and be the doctor. No, I'm already clever enough. Why I got to waste my time spending the 8 years? I know I took the MCAT or whatever, took the SAT, and the SAT I got a 795 out of 800. I know I get to any university. Well, I'm already a doctor. And people should treat me like a doctor. So that's the problem. When the truth is, the potential that you had only came from Hashem, and number two, you didn't even do anything about the potential. So the only real mark of a person is when he actualizes that potential. Because that actualization of the potential is who the person really is. But wanting to be recognized for that potential is a tremendous problem. And again, I think this is the problem that most people in life struggle with. Right? So now let's get this clear now. Let's review this again. Right? So a dream, what do we say? Prophecy has to come true. Dream doesn't have to come true. It's a potential reality. Right? And that's the proof. The proof is, Chazal says, one of the sources on the sheet at the end, it says, just like you can't have a silo without some grain in it, so you can't have a dream without some things that aren't a waste. Some things that are just not true. Every dream has to have some mishigas. So what does that mean? That's a sine qua non of any type of a dream. A dream will always have things that will never come true. Why? Because there's always going to be some potential that's not reached. A dream always, some part of the dream is going to be some narishkeit, some mishigas. It's just not true. Don't even bother to interpret it because it will never come true. Because dreams aren't the reality yet. Right? But Yosef's problem is he lives as if the potentiality came true. So now how do we do? Now let's look at the whole story with Yosef and see how it all fits into what's going on over here. First thing he does, he's curling his hair. He's styling his hair. What's he doing that for? Well, if you look at the last source over there, the Rambam tells us that a king has to get a haircut every day. It's halacha in kings. If a king doesn't get a haircut every day, he sinned. He's not, because the king has to look perfect. Not because he's egotistical, because the masses have to see the representative of God has to be picture perfect. Even the President of the United States, I think, every day gets a little, the royal barber gives himself a little off the top, just a little, not to have, you know, one hair out of place. You know, even after you go to the barber, and 2 days later, it says one hair's out of place. Can't be the king has one hair out of place. Right? He has to be seen in his glory. A king has to be handsome. It's a law of royalty he has to have. Right? So now, that makes sense once you're the king. Once you're the king, you have to dress that way. Well, look, he's already dressing like the king. Vuhunar, it says Vuhunar. And he's a young lad. It means he's a teenager. What is the definition of a teenager? All of us have the schus to have raised teenagers, or are in the process of raising teenagers, or have this to look forward to. Why do teenagers suffer so much? It's just a terrible part of life if they don't understand it. If you don't understand it, it's miserable. If you understand it, it can be tremendous. A teenager, what's the biggest challenge that a teenager has? A teenager wants to be treated like the adult that he is not. Right? A teenager wants to be treated like the adult that he is not. Right? He perceives that he is an adult at the ripe old age of 13. He has up as a shtickle seichel. The seichel's starting to kick in. He can discriminate. He can already make some abstract reasoning. A little bit, but compared to the adults, he's miles away. But he says, why, what, my opinion's just as good as my father's opinion. Till now, I didn't know how to think. Now I know how to think. And he thinks, once he knows how to think, it booms. It's like the university student who took psychology 101. He's the most clever man on the planet. Oh, I understand why you're doing this. You just started. So the teacher just started with each other like else, right? He perceives he's got to train like an adult, even though he isn't. And that's what Vuhunar, he was a lad. He wants to be what he's not yet. Now, obviously, he's more than just a simple teenager. But that's the first thing that an adult has to know, that you just can't tell the teenager like to go fly away. Because he says, what are you talking about? I know what I'm doing. So he's going to have to kind of go through what Yosef goes through a little bit. Right? So now what else does Yosef do? And you notice the kids, that once the teenagers, all of a sudden their hair has to look nice. All of a sudden they're getting into the looks and into this and into that. Because they think it's a big thing. They're a big guy, right? So then it says, Ves b'nei bilpa zilpa neshe aviv. It says he was friendly with the daughter, the sons of Bil and Zilpa. But now for the first time, the Torah calls them neshe aviv, the wives of his father. Until now, they always were called a pilegesh, or a shifa, concubine, a maidservant. They were never called his wives. They were now called wives. It's the first time. Why? And who is by Yosef's order? This was part of Yosef acting like a king. He's the one who starts conferring social status. The brothers are maligning the other brothers. You're the children of maidservants. You don't have the courage like we have, this and that. Another class to explain all that too. But you say, what are you talking about? Let's upgrade them. Their mothers are wives to our father. They're not just secondhand children, or it is. So he's already acting like an adult already has the power to manipulate. And if you're a king, you certainly can do this. Right? And then, of course, Yaakov gives him the ksones pasim. Yaakov, now this could be a mistake or not. There's different ways you can understand this. He gives him the coat of many colors. What is that? That is a royal garment. That's a royal garment. And Yaakov's saying, yes, you know, I see he could be the king. So Yosef is acting like royalty. He's assigning a caste system. He feels he has a status of royalty. His father's treating him like royalty. And what are the brothers saying? You're a Baal Chaloimus. You're a master of a dream. You don't have anything yet. It's still a dream. It's not reality. You are ahead of the game. For you as Yosef now, to live in the reality that you are the king, to live and think you're the king when it's only potential, that is delusional. And also very dangerous. If someone is the king before he's supposed to be the king, we're going to have major problems. Let's give it time, young man. Do the work that's necessary to develop to be the king. And maybe 20, 30 years from now, we'll gladly hand over to you to be the king. They're not going to fight. It's not an ego issue over here. But you want to start so much earlier. Okay, that's totally not proper. Right? And that's what they mean to say. He's the Baal Chalomos. He's the master of the dreams. You think that dream is already reality. But it says, Vaviv Shamaras HaDavar. The father waited. What does it mean? He was Yosheva Metzapa. He was looking forward to the day when he would become the king. Because he knew he had to be the king. But it would be something that would have to take time. So what happens? Yosef makes a mistake. So what was his mistake? Now, Yosef's a tzaddik in training. He's a tzaddik in training. So, what's his mistake? The mistake is, this is your potential. None of the other brothers have it, but he hurries up the process too quickly. So now what happens? You make that mistake. Now you're going to get the reaction. Look what happens when you do this. What happened? Your brothers don't really like you. You make some major mistakes because you're not yet a king. If you would be mature enough, then, you know, of course, I am the crown prince. Treat me like a king now. Why should we? They're saying, why should you? You're not the king yet. Maybe you won't actualize your potential. So they can already see where the tension is coming from when one person is already five steps ahead of the rest and the rest are behind. And they say, I don't necessarily agree with you, what you're able to accomplish yet. I don't know. We'll see. But don't expect us to treat you this way if you haven't earned it. And he said, what are you talking about? It's just a matter of time. And that's his mistake. It's a big mistake. And he's punished for it. And he has to learn. So what happens? He's thrown out. He's sold to Mitzrayim. So much for your dreams. In other words, what's happening? You have no ability to live in that reality now. And now, think about it. And that's what Yosef had to do. So then, when he thinks about it, so he's given a year time to think about it, and now he is tested. And now, the rabbis are telling us, and now you're going to see the rabbis with the three interpretations, when Yosef is now being seduced by the wife of Potiphar, what does he do, and how does he succeed, and how will we learn how to succeed? Okay? So rabbis are telling us how a person has to deal with that potential. So, let's say a person has a tremendous potential. Good. So how do you build towards that potential? What do you do? Right? If I know that I have potential, right? I can't deal with people as if I want the covet and recognition and I should have submissiveness if it's not been accomplished. So what do you have to do? So you have to make decisions today based on the fact that you have that potential. Meaning to say, you've got to make a decision. You've got to jumpstart yourself a little bit. Your potential is this, but you're really here. You want all the trappings that come with being over there. But guess what? That's going to happen a long time from now. But what do you have to do? You got to do all the work as if you were over there now, but don't expect any of the honor. You've got to make the decisions as if you were already there. But I'm not that. You see, here's the tension. It's the problem with a teenager. She says, I'm an adult. Give me the keys to the car. But you're not responsible. What do you mean? I passed the driving test. I took three lessons. Boom, boom, boom. I can drive. There's no problem. Give me the keys to the car. I'm an adult. She says, you want all the cover of this? Why don't you clean your room? You don't even call when you're coming late? What do you want? When I'll be an adult, I'll do that. Wait a minute. You can't have it both ways. When you be an adult, but you want to have everything like an adult. That's the destruction. That, ladies and gentlemen, is why the whole teenagers of this world are being self-destroying themselves. Because they have parents who don't know how to raise them with this understanding. What right do you give? You give the kid all the benefits of being a teenager and none of the responsibilities of a teenager? That's what the brother saw was the destructive power of Yosef. You can't do that. You're a teenager, you think you're going to be something, you act that way now. And when you act that way enough, then guess what? God will bring you what you deserve. Don't have what you don't deserve yet. See, it's so fine, the distinctions, because it's not like the teenagers are delusional. That is what they will be. That's right, they will be that way. And one day they will be mature, hopefully. Mature, responsible people, because they see that you're hopefully mature and responsible. So that it's just a matter of another 15 years and I'll be just like you, Dad. So why I got to wait to do the work for that? Let me have all the benefits and the keys to the car and everything else. And of course, what do they do? What do? They take the keys to the car, and then I come out in the morning, 6:45, take a look at the car, and they leave the light on in the inside of the car this morning. And I didn't want to bother to see if it's going to start. I take the other car. You know, I don't have to look both ways when I go through a red light, right? I mean, because right? It's like, what are you talking about? Like, give me the keys to the car. Do you realize you have a $40,000 bullet in your hand? Do you realize you can kill anybody in a second if you're not careful? That's what I'd be careful for. I'm already an adult. So can you imagine now? Can you imagine how terrible that would be? Now imagine the brother seeing Yosef thinks he's going to rule over the brothers. Do you know what kind of churban this would be? It would be a destruction. And you think Esav was much different than that? What was the whole problem with Esav? Esav had the same problem. Esav never wanted to do the work. Esav had the potential of being a tzaddik. No less the potential of Yaakov. But he didn't want to do the work. So that's the problem over here. So what you have to get past it, so what does Joseph have to do to get out of the problem? He has to make moral decisions today as the youth, far beyond what his maturity is now, but based on the fact of what you would, when you're 30, how would you act? You have to start acting that way today. And that's what you have to teach a teenager to do. You have to say, you want the keys to the car? You want this? You want that? It means you want me to treat you like a 4-year-old. Fine. I'm happy to do it. Act it. No. You can't have it both ways, my friend. You act it. You show me that whatever. You clean your room every day. You're responsible. You're this. But that's like a 40-year-old. That's right. But you want me to treat you like a 40-year-old? So act that way. I don't want to. You don't want to? Then I'm sorry. I can't give you all this stuff that's only going to destroy you. And that's hard for a teenager, and the truth is for adults too. Not all adults developed so well as teenagers. You know, adults who have trouble holding down jobs, you know, not for, you know, and sometimes it's their own fault. You know, I was speaking to my mechanic, Leo, nice Italian guy, he's a wonderful guy. I don't want to use the word tzaddik, but he's a wonderful guy. He's from the old school Italian guys, you know. He's in his 60s, and he's got three kids, and so he says he's got this worker over here. Someone asked him if he can give a job to somebody. So the guy says, I don't know why he's complaining to me, you know, he knows Mayor. This whole thing's from Mayor, so he always likes Mayor. Mayor was a hardworking boy. He says, I hired this guy a month ago, and every other day he calls in sick, he calls in this. Frankly, in a month, he's only worked for me maybe 10 days. He says, but he gets benefits and this and that and everything else. He has something to come in tomorrow. He says, what kind of work ethic have people learned? It's why, because everybody figures I'm entitled. I'm an adult. I'm entitled to get the pay and the this and the that. But to work your tail off, that they don't understand. They don't get that part. And that's the part nobody wants to do anymore, because we live in a society of entitlement. That whole work ethic to develop that potential just doesn't happen anymore. Why? Because the parents give it to you anyway without even working for it. If you do this, we'll take you on the trip. Then he doesn't do it, you gotta take him on the trip anyway. So they say you don't mean what you say anyway. So the kid doesn't have to develop it. But that's the biggest problem. So the Medrash over is telling, this is what Yosef had to go through. That only Yosef has a big problem now. A very attractive woman wants to be with him. And you see, Yosef's already sort of being like a king, because his master puts him in charge of the whole place. He's in charge of the whole place. So God says, okay, let's see if you're going to learn something. You were away for a year, and I put you in this place. What did you learn? Now, you gotta understand, what does it mean to be a king? What does it mean to be a leader? You gotta make a moral choice. You're only 18 years old, Yosef. You gotta make a moral choice based on you being 50. So what does he do? So Meir says he sees a picture of his father. His father, the tzaddik, in his 80s and 90s is a tzaddik. He says, that's what I wanna be. He sees that the breastplate will have the names of every tribe. Do you want to have the name? Do you want to be in that breastplate? Do you know what that means? That's unbelievable. You don't want to make yourself tummy. These are all important decisions you have to make. And the truth is, Yosef, right now you're not really there. What do you want? I'm only 18 years old. You're 18 years old, but you have the potential to be what you are. And now you have to make decisions as if you were that age. Pretend you're an old fogey. You know, you're over 40. And you're a guy with a mortgage and responsibilities and this and that. You just can't lose your job tomorrow. There's too much going on over here. You have too many kids to put through school. There's too much riding on this. Now you have to make the decision when you're there. So now, when a person makes positive decisions and commitments based on that potential, that is the very way to actualize the potential. That's how you actualize that potential. The fact that Yosef has holiness in him and that he's going to be on the Kohen Gadol's breastplate and he has a tremendous potential and he recognizes it and therefore he made the decision, says, I'm not going to get involved with the wife of Potiphar. Why is that? Because you made the moral decision based on your potential. That's the way he began to actualize his potential. So the potential doesn't mean that in 10 years it's going to happen. And that you're going to be the king in 10 years. It doesn't mean that some miracle, you know, in other words, oh, I got potential. So I'll just ride my time. I'll just count the clock. 10 years later, boom, I'm the king. That's not what it means. That's not what potential means. Potential means you're going to sweat it out for 10 years. And you still, and at the end, then you'll be that. To be able to do that, it's not an easy thing. That's the whole problem of Jews getting into Olam Haba. Kol Yisrael Yesham Chelek L'Olam Haba. Every Jew has the potential to be an Olam Haba. Doesn't say he is an Olam Haba. It's a big mistake. Everybody says you have. It says it doesn't say Chelek Bo Olam Haba. It says Chelek Lo Olam Haba. You have a portion to create an Olam Haba, not just walk right in. You have an entrance card. You get in. So everybody in this room has the potential to be an Olam Haba. So what does everybody want? I want to be treated like I'm already in Olam Haba and I don't have to do the work for it. And I have to be respected and honored and this and that because I'm an Olam Habanik. No, you have to make decisions now not being in Olam Haba. Not being in Olam Haba. You have to make a decision as if you were in Olam Haba right now. So what does a person in Olam Haba do on an Erev Shabbos? They're working to the last minute? You work to the very last minute? You walk in the very last second to make Shabbos? Well, because I'm going to go to Olam Haba. I'm an Olam Haba, Nick. He says, that's only a potential is Olam Haba. You want to actualize it? You're going to have to make a decision on Friday afternoon based on you being in Olam Haba. If we would have that picture that Yosef had, what is Olam Haba? What is Hashem giving us all? What are we all, every one of us a Jew? With a potential, what does Olam Haba mean? Olam Haba means you're going to sit next to God and enjoy every minute of it. There's nothing else on your mind but sitting next to God and enjoying every minute of it. So, oh, that's a potential. Okay, so I'm a Jew, I'm already locked in, so it doesn't matter what I do, I'm going to get in there. That's not true. That's not true. You're not going to get in there if you don't make those decisions. And that's the problem we have with it. I'm going to get in anyway, I just got to wait till I die. Do what I want here when I die. That's the biggest destruction. You destroy yourself. You got to say, you know, right now I may not really appreciate what it means totally to be close to Hashem. But I've been told that I got to do certain things to be able to do that. I've got to be able to really enjoy the Shabbos. And to really enjoy the Shabbos, I got to prepare before the Shabbos. And I can't come in the last minute. I can't not make the proper preparations. But I don't feel it yet. That's fine, but take a picture of what it's going to be later on. Later on, there's no work. There's no boss. There's no stores. There's none of that. There's no sports. So now you gotta start living in that, at least make decisions now based on that reality later. Because if you don't, you're gonna make a mess of yourself. And that's Aviv Shamar Sadavar. Your father's, and Hashem is our father. He's waiting. When's it gonna happen that we're gonna, Hashem, when am I gonna take you into Olam Haba? And yeah, you should put on a ksonas pasim, put on a nice coat. You know what? Then maybe you'll believe it could happen. So what should you do? So maybe an Erev Shabbos, put on a nice suit. Put on a ksonas pasim. How can you come an Erev Shabbos with your weekday clothing and have time to change? Then you're never gonna believe you're a king. You gotta dress the part. You gotta dress the part to show that that potential can eventually happen, right? So that's what the rabbis are saying. The rabbis are saying that had Yosef not internalized the potential, you have to internalize, that's the potential that I'm not there, but I will be the king, and I will have my name on the breastplate, and I will be like my father, exactly like my father, but I've gotta decide and live like my father today, even though I'm not totally there yet, that will make me be there. Then he's able to say these moral things. How can I do this? This isn't a morally proper thing. This can't be done. This is sin to God. That doesn't come out of the woodwork. You think an 18-year-old is going to refuse the most adorable Paris Hilton-type Egyptian in the world? And it's going to say, oh, it's no problem. I can resist that. What are you talking about? Nobody could resist that. What he went through? Abandoned by his family? And all the things he had to go through? Where does it come off? Where does it come off? He can say no. Because, the Medrash says, because he was living in the reality of what his potential is and living with it right now. Living with it right now. That wasn't easy. And then you have the objectivity to call a spade and say, this is totally morally not correct. Right? So now, what's left, so it's good? It makes sense? It all makes sense now? So now, what's left to discuss is two more little points. So what did he say to her? He said, here's his whole story. How can I do this? It's not right. He trusts me with everything, blah, 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 blah. And then it's like an afterthought, v'chatasi l'Hashem, and I'm gonna sin to God. So he should have just said, I sin to God. What's all this talk before him? So the answer is, Yosef is exactly making the moral decisions of actualizing his potential right now with these words that he is saying. What I mean to say, he dreams he's gonna be a king. Okay, you dream you're gonna be a king. That's your potential. So now you have to act like a king, even though you're not a king yet, and you're far away from king. You gotta make the moral decision to be a king. Okay, let's think about it now. What's the greatest thing a king has to be careful of? What's the greatest concern of anyone who could be a king? It's the final, following question. Does the state serve the king? Or does the king serve the state? Do I need 3,000 pairs of shoes for my wife to keep in a closet? Or don't I? Right? Do I need $5 billion of assets salted away in a Swiss account that's supposed to be going to all the poor Arabs? Or not? You know? So one good thing you could say about JFK, not a lot of good things you've said about JFK, but one good thing you could say about him, he didn't take a salary. He took $1. That was his salary. But that's about it. But the etzem of a king knows one thing, it's not me. It's everybody else comes first. Right? Does the king own the country and make everyone a serf for his personal self-aggrandizement? Or is he there to serve the people? So now Yosef has to show this. You want to be a king? Great. I'm going to give you an opportunity right now to make a moral choice of someone 20 years older as the king, even though you're not the king right now. And what's that? A question of betraying a trust. Now, king, everybody, oh, King Arthur, King Henry, what is King Henry? He could chop anybody's half off he wants, take any woman and sleep with whoever he wants. That's what being a king is. That's what being a king is. Being a king is you have to give yourself over to the country. So now he has the opportunity to take this woman, and that's, see, people mix up kingship with power, think power for myself. Powers I can have whatever I want. That's the teenager's problem. They have a certain power for whatever I want. No, you have a power to do chesed. You have a power to help. You have a power to study. Power to make yourself, to make the rest of people benefit from you. So what Yosef is saying here, he's giving the exact test of what it means to be a king, and he's saying, I can't betray the trust. I have a responsibility. Someone entrusted me all the keys to the house. And Yosef understands that the whole reason not to live with this woman is because one day he's going to be a king. And as a king, you could never do this. As a king, you could never take advantage of your power and go take any woman that you want. I have to worry about everybody else. You understand that kingship doesn't mean swallowing up the people. It doesn't mean betraying the trust of the people. I'm a public servant. As a public servant, I can't have what I want. And that's the whole spiel, he says. That's the king I want to be. And also, it happens to be a sin to God. But the most important thing was to develop to be that kind of king. Okay, very good. There's only one last thing, and then we're done. One last thing. So see, this is the whole parsha now. It's Yosef's struggle to activate that potential. Right? So as we said every week, every one of these people is inside of us. Every one of us has a Yosef. What's the word Yosef mean? What's the word Yosef mean? Increase. Increase yourself. Increase yourself. You have potential, increase it. You got that's who you are. You're safe. Add on to it. You are small. What do we say at every bris of a little baby boy? Zahakaton godol, yeah. He's a small, let him become a big. Just like the moon. You're small, one day you're gonna be big. That's that's what the pasuk was saying over there in Tehillim. Right? They said, blow the shofar when the moon is covered up. The whole idea of the moon being small, the whole dilemma of the moon. And then what does the pasuk say after that? It says, Eidus, what's the testimony? Behi Yosef Samo. The biggest testimony that this can happen is that Behosef. What's this? Behosef, not Yosef. Because his name on the breastplate was spelled Behosef. With the hey of Hashem. He was singing about Hashem. The biggest proof that the moon's purpose of renewal is to grow into its position is you see that Yosef himself grew into that position when he became the viceroy of Egypt and he succeeded. And Yosef grew up. So that which the moon's contention was, that's really the whole Jewish people's issue that they have. We have to grow up and develop that potential, but not want to get the honor without having gone through that work over there. That's what the Medrash is telling us over here. So there's one last thing. So now what happened? So why didn't things go so fine? See, he was a good servant. He passed the test. He acted like an adult. Then he gets thrown into jail. Gets thrown into jail. Because why? You got to see it. Maybe you're going to regret that decision. You know, the teenager has to make a decision, right? The mother says, okay, you know, you've been pretty good, you know. Okay, I'm going to give you the keys to the car. But you've got to be back by 11 o'clock. Saturday night, you're going to be back for 11 o'clock. It's a 10:45, there's 5 kids in the car. Come on, we just went to one place. Now there's a great movie going on. There's a big party over here. Man, you got the wheels, you take us there, it's going to be great. And my mother said, I have to be back by 11 o'clock. What? What kind of baby are you? You have to listen to your mother be back at 11 o'clock. Come on, are you a man or are you a wimp? He says, I'm a mature adult. And a mature adult is responsible and comes back at 11 o'clock. Tomorrow I have to call to davening. It's Sunday morning. I have to be in shul davening. Oh, what a wimp. So now, most kids will say, well, okay, well, what's another 5 hours going to hurt? Right? No. But this kid says, no, I'm going home at 11. What? Oh, little baby, this is that, you know. And then he says, sorry, drops everybody off, goes in at 11. Mother said, that was very nice of you. And what happens the next day in school? On Monday, you see his desk will be painted. His stuff will be trashed. There's going to be some epithets. There's going to be all kind of Twitters. Look at wimpy Yosef. Wimpy Yosef. Can't do anything. And all the friends. And he becomes disenfranchised from all his friends in the school. That's what happens when you make a mature decision, isn't it? Right? What's Michalos' golden rule? No good deed goes unpunished. Right? You do the responsible thing, people hate you for it. And you will suffer for it. That's what happens. So now why? To see do you stick to your guns or not. Because there are consequences to these. You want to act like an adult. It's not just make the decision. Now you got to live with the decision. You got to take the flack. It may not be what you want, But that's what a mature... Now, figure, what were the choices? He could have slept with the wife of Potiphar. They would have figured a way to murder Potiphar, and he would have been really on easy streak. He'd been one of the highest diplomats in Egypt, right? On the one hand, what did he get for being the right person? She cries rape. He can't defend himself. He's thrown in jail for 10 years. Now sit on that one, Yosef. Let's see if you still have the ability to be a king. Now, he could, you know, and this is terrible already. This is like unbelievable. This is what I got. This is what it means to be mature. And that's what, and that we have to encourage our children. Our children are going to make these decisions, and you can bet your boots their friends are going to make fun of them. You got to learn with them this parsha from straight to finish. Every parent should teach his child this parsha. And then teach it to yourself. This is what it takes. You're going to have to make tough decisions, and you're not going to be rewarded. Because that's what being an adult is. You do what's right, not what's expeditious. So now it's 10 years he has to suffer. So he grows. He grows in those 10 years. Right? And when the two butlers have this terrible dream, so what happens? He looks at them and says, "Oh, you're not looking so happy today. What's the matter, guys?" Right? He's still acting like a proper king. But boy, if anybody, he should have given up on mankind. Oh, people are terrible. They're terrible. Why should I look to help anybody? You're honest and you get shafted. But you know, he still sticks with the program. He does what he can. He acts like a leader. He says, "Tell me your problem. Tell me your problem." But now he makes one little more mistake and he still has to learn one more thing. You see, what he had was a dream. The dream now was becoming a prophecy. It was becoming a prophecy because he was living up to the potential. He's living up to the potential. Once the dream lives up to the potential, becomes a prophecy, then God takes over. And then you don't have to micromanage so much. God will take over because you've now reached that level. And once you reach that level, you know, then you have to act even differently still. In other words, he had already reached the level but didn't realize he reached the level. There'll be the point when you will become the king. You are that person. But you don't believe you are that person. Then you don't act that way totally. So now what happens? So when he interprets a dream, so he says, "Oh, by the way, when brings you back to your position, remember to put a good word in for me." Rabbi said, "We don't believe in Hashem." So what are you talking about? So Taka, why did he not believe in Hashem? So the answer is, once the dream came true, and it wasn't a dream, it was a prophecy, then he didn't have to worry about it anymore. Once it was a prophecy, God will take care of him. You don't have to do anything. And that was Yosef's last thing he didn't chop. So the verse 7 says, you're going to sit in jail another 2 years. To know that you're already on that level, and when it's time to go out, it won't even be you doing anything. I'll take care of everything. It'll all work out. And that was the last step that he had to learn. That was the last step that he still had to learn. That the prophecy did become, the dream became the prophecy. And sometimes we don't realize we get to that point where, so this is an interesting flow of life that comes. You start off, you're not on that level. We all have what we call the teenage mindset, no matter what age you're at. We expect to get a certain amount of honor. We expect to get all the perks of life, but we haven't deserved it. And if we expect those things, it becomes very dangerous. So what do you have to do? We have to make decisions based on being beyond who we are. And those decisions will bring us to that point. But then there's going to be a point where, and as far as us to realize, when do I reach the point where I am now that new person? And now that I'm that new person, then even more is expected from that level. Now that I am really the king, then I have to behave even more that way. Now that the prophecy really is now a prophecy, the dream is a prophecy, so now I have to be able to say, you know, I don't have to make any more efforts. Hashem will now carry the rest of the ball. He didn't yet believe that the dream became a reality. So Hashem says, you have to believe when the dream becomes reality and act exactly the way you're supposed to now that it has become the reality. And now you have to expect the coven, and you have to expect, you know, what happens to the guy? You get to a point, let's say you're the teenager, you become the parent. So when you're the teenager, you want the respect of being a teenager. You don't deserve any of that respect. You have to make the decisions as an adult. You still don't deserve any respect. But then there's going to be that magic moment where you become an adult. And now you have to demand the respect from other people. Because now you are the adult. And now you have to get that respect. And you still think you're the kid. Because you've always been thinking you were the kid. You always were small. But now you're big. And now that you're big, you have to act like you're big and expect to be treated like you're big. Expect to be treated like you're big. You can't anymore say, no, it's not my place. There is a place. Now that you're 50 years old, and now you're an adult, you know what? When you see something wrong, you see someone doesn't give you the right honor, you pick him up and say, you're supposed to give me more honor. That's not the way you treat an adult. And you're supposed to do that now, because that's who you are. And I say, well, who am I to tell my kid what to do? And that's what Yosef, he didn't realize. Once you reach that state, now Hashem has to treat you like an adult. You're the king, Hashem has to take you out. You don't have to do anything more. You don't have to beg people. Realize that Hashem's going to do this. So he made that mistake. Gotta wait 2 more years. Next parasha, all of a sudden, boom, out of nowhere, after Yosef gives any hope, Paro puts him right, he's standing right in front of Paro. And Paro says, oh, I heard you know how to interpret dreams. So what Yosef, if he didn't learn the lesson, he would have said, yeah, I'm pretty good at it. He said, no, the dreams belong to God. In other words, I'll let God take care of the rest. Because the dream is already a prophecy. And once he did that, that guaranteed his success. Because had he not done that, then Hashem would have had him fail again. So these struggles of Yosef are incredible. It's so real. It's so real that we all have to go through this. So much sadness and aggravation that we have from our children, we have from ourselves, that we always have these heightened expectations. Because, and we are all called B'nai Malachim, children of kings. We're all supposed to grow up to be that king, but we have to make these difficult decisions. Right? So we have children who have to make these decisions, and it's a peer pressure. How do I do this? How do I not do this? You gotta explain it. This is exactly what Yosef went through. Let's go through and see what he had to do. And then the kids will eventually get to that potential that they want. That's the whole thing about the moon. The moon one day will become that way. That's when Mashiach's gonna come. Mashiach will come when every potential is realized. Every prince becomes a king, and it comes through hard work. You see, Yosef, what he had to do, the Rambam says, what's the example of Kiddush Hashem? Kiddush Hashem is what he did with the wife Potiphar. You see, everything Yosef did, he suffered. All good decisions came by a price he had to pay, but he was willing to live with the price. And only then could he, next week's Parsha, then get back to his brothers, and deal with them the way he's supposed to have dealt with them in the beginning. The problem might be, maybe the brothers didn't grow up as fast as he did. That we'll have to talk about next week's Parsha. Okay.
Shkayach.
Okay, next week there will be class, but the following 2 weeks will not be class, because I know a lot of people are going away, and I need to do some other type of work. Give everybody a little bit of a break. All right. So next week we're on.
Can I
put a photo? Just go to Jeanette.
Hello. How are you? I didn't leave the light on in the car last night.
You didn't. Somebody else.
You drove the blue car. You were the last one. You parked in the garage.
Stop saying that.
Oh no. When it started, I used it this morning.
Yeah, I turned it on.
So the light
at 4:46. The last person who came in left the light. I'm not going to say who.
I was like getting so nervous. I'm like, I didn't leave the light on. Who got it? Okay.
I'm saying that's what it is. It's like,
yeah.
Get around to it. Yes, ma'am.
Can I ask you just a quick question?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay,
is it okay if I just do this while you're talking to me?
So, with coffee, for example.
With what?
Coffee.
Coffee?
Like Starbucks.
Yeah.
And you have like coffee places and kashrus. Do you know like what the deal is? Are you allowed to have the milk like that they use like when they steam it? Are you not allowed?
They steam it.
Because usually when, let's say, for example, you have like a latte, they use this machine, and they put the milk inside, and they use the heat from the machine to steam the milk. And they only use that machine for milk. And then they pour it into like a cup with coffee and like flavor. I don't know like what the deal is with like the
house. Listen, if there's no other trace ingredients involved, then it's okay.
Okay, and let's say, for example, like with Chalav Yisrael, if they clean the machine in between every use, are you allowed to use it? Are you allowed to drink the milk from that machine?
Depends. depends how well they clean it. All these things are risky. I have to be honest, they're all risky. You have to, if you're watching them and they're careful, you make sure they don't make any mistakes, then it's okay. But you have to realize it's a place where there's not kosher stuff there, right?
Or, well, the coffee's kosher, and the flavor is kosher, and the milk is kosher.
So what's not kosher?
Sometimes they have, like, dessert, and there are certain flavors that aren't kosher.
Certain flavors of what? For the coffee? So you have to be careful that whatever they're using is clean. It hasn't been used for other flavors. I mean, bitty of it, you're not going to really eat any trade. Even if something got in, after the fact, it'll be bottled b'shishim. It'll be nullified in 60.
Yeah.
But it's not, so it's, the question is, l'chadchila, what's the better way to do it? So, listen, you're always better off, you know, getting the simplest coffees.
Okay.
I'm not going to say anybody's eating treif. I'm not going to say anybody's eating treif. A Yorei Shemayim would be more careful.
That's all I really wanted to know.
I know there's a whole big thing that people have to drink coffee now.
Yeah.
A big thing for people, but you gotta be careful, because let's say you go to the ice cream, Baskin Robbins, there's a few trade flavors there. You have to really be careful when they're washing out the scoop, they're really washing out the scoop.
That's true.
And they're not gonna be careful, so you have to be more careful than they are.
I know, I always ask them questions, like, why don't I ask them questions?
And you can say, could you wash this out, please? Before you scoop it, whatever. That's what, at least they have one kosher one.
Yeah, thank you.
Should support the kosher one.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yes, my friend. How are you?
Good. Baskin Robbins, by the way, there's nothing that kosher anymore.
Oh, not anymore? Oh, okay.
Question. So this thing this weekend in Amy. So I obviously wasn't done in front of the thing. So the main thing is not to be done in front of the.
What are we talking about? I'm sorry.
The naming, the proper naming.
Okay. So,
it's not that your name is not brought up to the Torah, you're saying, correct? That's it.
Well, how were you named?
At home, my parents couldn't afford it to go to the thing. They wanted money, so they didn't do it.
So we have to name you by the Sefer Torah.
Okay. So my son would be the same thing too.
Which son?
Well, both probably.
But you have two adult kids, right? A boy and a girl.
Two boys. One boy, one girl, yeah. And then I have the younger one, Daniel.
Right. So Daniel, I'm sure, was named by the Beis Din, right?
I bring you the paper or whatever.
The Beis Din named him. I'm sure they named him.
I don't know.
I'm sure they named him.
Well, he went in the water, yeah. So.
But I'm sure they gave him a name. They had to. There's no way they didn't. Just like they gave Ivanka a name. Ivanka got a name. The Beis Din had to give you a name.
They gave him a name?
And they gave your son a name, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So
the question is you.
Okay, me, no. So I
and you're two and you're two older kids.
Two older ones.
Where the girl needs named? A Where two. Were they named? Well, the boy had a bris, right?
Yes.
And who was the mall?
Well, I wouldn't.
But it was in Toronto?
Toronto, yeah. Thornhill.
So it's probably was named properly, too. It was probably you and your daughter.
Right. Just me and my daughter. So named properly mean going to a
So this Shabbos, you can get an aliyah, and we'll make a proper... Naming.
Okay, so it's just me and I get
your
my
daughter.
So I gotta get her Hebrew name.
We could do everybody's name to make everybody happy, but you and your daughter. So you good.
Daniel has to do it.
No,
the Beis Din did it for him.
They
had to have done it. If it was done by Rabbi Lowy, it was done properly.
Yeah.
Okay.
But when you were a baby, it wasn't done properly.
No,
your oldest daughter probably wasn't done properly.
Right. Okay.
I mean, who did the bris for you?
Mine?
Yeah.
It was done in the hospital.
It was done by an Orthodox rabbi because he was on Shabbos. So that I remember, because he had to leave his tools there, and then he had to walk there.
Do you remember?
No, his mother tells us the story every.
I know the story.
But they didn't go to the Torah. That's just so no.
I'm saying, but they didn't make a meal afterwards
no.
or anything like that.
No.
So you should get your name mentioned.
Okay,
give me the Jeanette. What's the name? It has to be your name and your father's Hebrew name, full Hebrew names.
A full Hebrew, okay. Got
and
that.
Your son's full Hebrew name and your full Hebrew name for him.
Okay, I'll give it one second.
So give Jeanette all, and you have to get an aliyah. You have to come to shul. Get an aliyah.
Yeah, okay. Oh, it's like, when's your class?
And you can make a token contribution to Kiddush. Token.
As okay.
That means it's like you're giving a Kiddush.
Right. So you're doing the class this weekend, right?
No, I'm not, because I'm going to be doing the namings.
Oh, then I'll stay. Okay.
When we have this, it's about four families are doing it, right. So it doesn't pay, so I'll just stay there.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Okay?
Okay, great.
Excellent. My pleasure.